Blog Talk Radio.
Later, maybe. Oh, I wish I had. Here. The open-mindedness. That's why it's curious, eh? We are a curious lot. We come to this, and it's not that we have to be tolerant about any of the work of Freemasonry. We realize that just like history, the first telling may not reveal the entire truths, the entirety of the things that have happened. And sometimes it's the second, more often it's the third and beyond. The third telling, how do you, not the same thing over and over again, but that might well be the case necessarily, but what we take away, like each time you're explaining to a small child, although you may become impatient that the child has asked you the same question repeatedly, each time you're being measured. You're expressing something to that child, and the child takes something different away. Maybe that doesn't mean much to you. Maybe it will when you see it a little differently, see it through the eyes of that emerging neurology, that mind that we can barely understand, that's just craving information. And you and I, in our old age wisdom, become intolerant. Eh? You've asked that before. I don't want to hear it. It's not like the backseat conversations. Are we here yet? Are we there yet? Are we here yet? It's a cliche. For you and I today, we need to know, and we need to have the advantage of observations. If we don't need anything, if we're not receptive to it, if we're an island unto ourselves, then we're receptive to nothing. If we're caught up in the need to be right, right is truth, then Freemasonry is not really going to be very much use, is it? If you're looking for the things then that will nurture conscience in a way, not guilt, that's tedious, paternalistic. Discovery. Look around. The world is changing around us. Every single day, the chemistry is changing. Just like the new fellow walking into the lodge, walking through the door under careful supervision in a state of darkness. The chemistry in the room changes. And some will, of their necessity, try to ensure that their presence predominates, their way of thinking predominates. And the truth is, it's always a reblend, a mixture of polymer. Always though organic. Hey, today we have an interesting program, I think. Oh, and because it's here in the Northern Hemisphere, it's snowing, and solstice is coming very, very close, just a few days away. So the days are short and the nights are pleasantly long. Oh, and if you're of a mind that this is all an unpleasantness to be barely tolerated, I'm sorry, I don't see it quite that way. This is a changing of the seasons, and just like our ancient forefathers, we can anticipate. This is a season of anticipation, the new growth, the turning, where days become longer, the life-giving light and warmth. Affects the fields, growth, new beginnings, cleansing, hogmene, and clean out the year and measure and move on. I like to think we're intuitive enough or smart enough to learn from history. And my goodness, when I look around, that Freemasonry embraces spiritualism rather than religion it seems to have been developing a mainstream following out there around us. Spiritualism, we see it. Oh, we can still see it through the robust orthodoxy of the Christian churches that came up with such well-worn terms as pagan and occult and things that didn't agree with their philosophy. That's not a put down of any one religion. They're all claiming the way, the source of righteousness for man's soul. They, in their own ways, come at the questions from different histories and different perspectives, all effective in the major religion. And we continue to experiment, just as we always have, to find something that answers more completely that comprehensive theory of the universe, and that our mathematicians and physicists have been struggling, or philosophers have been struggling with for so very long. No struggle here. This is good music, good company, your company. and talk, listen, reminders, that's all. Oh, every day we're reminded of some insight we must have, you know. Are we aware? It's curious. Awareness is a new it has a new audience. I don't know if it's all pop psychology, but awareness. There seems to be a sense that the composite, all these different sources of awareness, have lost track of the fact that it's just you and me. We're the individual. And we need a little bit of time to sort things out. And we don't do that. We don't, like, heard me talk about this in different times. We can't and don't force education on anybody. We can enforce some things. We can't enforce respect. We can't force dignity. We can force fear, disdain, and contempt. And we're pretty good at that. But leadership, that service to mankind, to humanity, a desire to move through life without causing inconvenience to another living creature. Equipping ourselves with ideas that we, you as a fellow member of the Brotherhood, can embrace. That's important. And then you pick the rock and look into the darkness and see what's there. Only you do it with an order that is encouraging around you. Cool poetry today. This time of year, as you know, we revisit Alexander Pushkin. Yeah. Russia's definition of brilliance. But first, we have some music that you might just enjoy. It's great having you here. Sit back. Fill up your mug with something that you enjoy. Sit back. Let us do the work. Thank you. Putting on mittens and a warm scarf, isn't it? Music like that. Yeah, that'll do. That will do. Thank you. There, the fire's crackling behind me. Got a nice, a really good latte, if I do say so myself. Sitting here. I'm thinking about all those incredible moments that I've been privy to experiencing over the course of my membership in this brotherhood that you've allowed. Amazing. I'd like you to lean in for a few minutes with me, and then we'll talk. I'll be sure to listen. Be sure to listen. I'll try and keep my eyes open too. Stepping into the mirror, I always thought that was such an interesting concept. It's like when I was a teenager writing letters to God explaining the anguish and the thoughts that I couldn't reveal to anybody else. But I discovered some not too long ago and that I kept in a box. Musings, as they say. Stepping into the mirror, how many ways can a good man show generosity? Is it obvious that Freemasonry elevates the mind, influences behavior, and instills a sense of conviction? Is renewal, oh, here I go with questions, is renewal constant and part of the obligation of a brotherhood so obvious yet so obscure? That's us. We're there, but people go walking past our doors with their own sense of earnestness and importance and don't give us much thought to them. Plato brought to mind the distinction between opinion and truth. After we scrub away good manners, diplomacy, and discretion, each man has a unique and equal perspective, opinions. We also acknowledge some opinions being equal, also some are expert. He went on to describe, perhaps idealistically, that if we press another man to explore his reasoning, reveals the difference between his thinking and yours and mine. By doing that, knowing those differences takes us steps closer to knowing who we are. That chases down the axiomatic purpose of a life. Know thyself. Within that process is another. Creating the atmosphere that allows this exchange of ideas. Good manners and avoiding distemper are essential if we want to create the atmosphere. Aude vide tace. The formula is right there. It's given to us. Walking a fine line, spirited and encouraging, but not aggressive. Finding truth is a different matter. Purposeful, not friendly. Out of all the opinions, truth requires a singular outcome. With this in mind, it becomes obvious when a man confuses his opinion for truth and attempts to press that error on his companions. Don't be guilty of that. Be sensitive and try this way of reasoning before judging. See if your experience is consistent with Plato. Perhaps the Socratic method has some validity. Courage, energy, and commitment are not uniformly at work. So be part of the breakout group. It is a step, one of many that will follow.
Même sans ta présence, je vais t'aimer. Même sans espérance, je vais t'aimer. Tous les jours de ma vie. Dans mes poèmes, je c'est toi que j'aime, c'est toi que j'aimerai tous les jours de ma vie. Et je vais pleurer quand tu t'éloigneras, je vais pleurer, mais tu me reviendras. Et j'oublierai la douleur de mes nuits. Tu sais, je souffrirai à chaque instant d'attente. Je souffrirai, mais quand tu seras là, je renaîtrai tous les jours de ma thank you.
Alexander Pushkin seems to reflect what's happening around, you know. Very intuitive a fellow, very, very cool. He paid attention. He was a fellow of considerable detail and had an ability to write, to use language, to write. And pass that on to you and I, to humanity. This fellow was the period, he was born on the 26th of May of 1799 in Moscow, and he died on the 29th of January, 1837, in St. Petersburg. And he's known for being a Russian poet and novelist, dramatist, and short story writer. He's often been considered his country's greatest poet and the founder of modern Russian literature. It's interesting. Like so many of us, happenstance in life hasn't always been a pathway to success, eh? Pushkin's father came from an old boyar family. His mother was a granddaughter of Abram Hannibal, who, according to family tradition, was an Abyssinian princeling bought as a slave in Constantinople and adopted by none other than Peter the Great. And he became comrade in arms with the leader. Pushkin immortalized him in an unfinished historical novel that he wrote in 1827, The Negro of Peter the Great. Like many aristocratic families in early 19th century Russia, Pushkin's parents adopted French culture, and he and his brother and sister learned to talk and to read in French. They were left much in the care of their maternal grandmother, who told Alexander especially stories of his ancestors in Russia. From Erna Rodinova Yakolieva, his old nurse, a freed serf, and he includes her as Tatiana's nurse in Yevgeny Onegin, if you've not heard, it's a great opera, by the way. During summers at his grandmother's estate near Moscow, he talked to the peasants and spent hours alone living in the dream world of a precocious, imaginative child. And he read widely in his father's library and gained stimulus for the literary guests who came to the house. But enough. Poetry and unlocking the secrets. Poetry, when it is really such, is truth. So says John Stuart Mill. And fiction also, if it is good for anything, is truth. But they are different truths. The truth of poetry is to paint the human soul truly. The truth of fiction is to give a true picture of life. The two kinds of knowledge are different and come by different ways, come mostly to different persons. Great poets are often proverbially ignorant of life. What they know has come by observation of themselves. They have found within them one highly delicate and sensitive specimen of human nature, on which the laws of emotion are written in large characters, such as can be read off without much study. Other knowledge of mankind, such as comes to men of the world by outward experience, is not indispensable to them as poets. But to the novelist, such knowledge is all in. He has to describe outward things, not the inward man, actions and events, not feelings. And it will not do for him to be numbered among those who, as Madame Roland said of Brissot, know men, but not men. This is a charming poem, and I think you'll get it from the onset. The title of it is Outlived My Every Wish. I have outlived my every wish. Each dear dream seen rudely broken, and naught remains but woe and plaint, sole heritage of vacant heart. Despoiled by storms of jealous fate, the tree of life has faded fast. I live in grief and loneliness, and wait in hope the end may come. As when the last forgotten leaf that quivers on the naked branch by nipping frost is sudden caught, and shriek of winter storm is heard. Just like, watch what you wish for, because it might come true. And then what? And then what comes next? Thank you. Young people, late teens, playing jazz, Spanish, this is all from Spain. A lot of the English that they know is the lyrics to a song. I think they've made a contribution. I hope you agree. Yeah, it's pretty good. You find as we go through, you've probably heard somebody in the lodge somewhere or sometime talk to you about meanings within meanings. And never really given it much pause when you heard it, other than popping your head up. You know, you look like, we look like the little meerkat colony, popping our heads up and looking around curiously. Well, we're going to, today, Colin Dyer takes us into that direction again. Meanings within meanings. And I think he is talking about a process, the content of, you and I need to be able to unpack for ourselves, because what I find interesting as a process may not be thrilling to you. And I know that there are always stern-minded Masons who have that attitude of correction about them. But I tend to think there's room for a more relaxed and contemplative approach to the ideas of Freemasonry. I don't think we need to be testosterone driven or muscular in the way we approach it. I think we lose, as a matter of fact, I think we lose that nuanced conversation when we do that, whenever we do that. No. Symbols have meanings within meanings, growing, as it were, out of each other. And it is that difficult times for those who are just commencing to study symbology, to avoid becoming a little befogged by this fact. For example, in general, the square represents matter. On the question of the shape of the square, it is often pointed out that in the arms of the original Grand Lodge of 1717, copied from those of the Masons Company and incorporated in those of the United Grand Lodge today, the compasses are shown extended on a chevron. This chevron is a device that looks exactly like a square, with arms of equal length, and as the square and compasses together represent the symbol of Masonry to many people, the change from the square of unequal arms to one of equal arms has been considered as copying that included on the coat of arms. This seems to have come about in the 1820s, shortly after the union of the Grand Lodges. Is that 1816? Which is followed by the adoption of a new coat of arms incorporating those of the two former Grand Lodges. so that matter was in consideration at about the same time. I am informed by an official of the College of Arms that the chevron is not intended to represent a square at all. It may be found on the arms of about a quarter of the livery companies of the City of London, not necessarily restricted to those which have any connection with building. It is probable that it arose from a building connection, and it is most likely that it represents the gable roof form. It is not, therefore, even necessary that the angle enclosed is a right angle, although such an angle is often a convenience in design. It is equally possible that it is often found as a device in arms as it forms a convenient method for the designer to divide a shield into three more or less equal parts, where a cross would give inconveniently small areas in dividing the shield into four. William Hutchison wrote of the square in the 1770s, and he said, "To try the works of every mason, the square is presented as the probation of his life, proving whether his manners are regular and uniform. For masons should be of one principle and one rank, without the distinctions of pride and pageantry, intimating that from high to low, the minds of masons should be inclined to good works, above which no man stands exalted by his fortune." While Dr. Oliver's collection includes this: "When I hold up the square, what virtues are presented to your view? As an appendage to an operative mason, it is indeed used merely to try and adjust all irregular angles and to assist in bringing rude matter into due form. But as a speculative mason's jewel, it teaches morality and justice. It shows the beauty of order and sobriety and displays the advantages arising from a mutual communication of benefits. In a word, we are instructed by this instrument to act upon the square with all mankind by doing to others in as similar circumstances we would have them do to us. Golden rule." That's germane to all of the major religions. Yeah. Dr. Oliver also quotes from a reverend mason of the 18th century regarding all three of the second degree working tools, which in that century were the movable jewels of the lodge. By these, he learns to reduce rude matter into due form and rude manners into the more polished shape of moral and religious rectitude, becoming thereby a more harmonious cornerstone of symmetry in the structure of human society, until he is made a glorified cornerstone in the temple of God, made without hands, eternal in the heavens. In the humanity and benevolence to all his rather men, and by the plumb rule, plumb line of fortitude to support himself through all the dangers and difficulties of this, our fallen, feeble state. What do you think? The old minister get it right? It's a little chewy, but we'll pick this up. Since 1816. The three movable jewels have been regarded as the working tools in the second, so that the level of plumb rule combined with the square in this connection also. A little quartering. Yeah. Christmas song for men. It's from it's a popular Christmas carol written in 1865 by a 29-year-old English writer, William Chatterton Dix. He was struck with a sudden near-fatal illness and confined to bed rest. And this is what he came up with. Eh? What is not to like? I'd like to wrap up the program today by asking you a few questions. You know, I've been trying to emphasize the ethics of Freemasonry, not to preach about it, but noticing that as a values-based organization, the conversation about ethics seems to sometimes fade. I don't think it's a conversation that needs to be held directly every time we're together. My goodness, no. But I think it's always one of the aspects in the room, in the lodge with us, that we need to be, this is where we need to be a bit mindful. Oh my goodness, yes. How do we handle all these things we need to be mindful of? There's just too many of them. Reduce it to one or two and I'm fine with it. Well, you little genius. you're equipped with this incredible, incredible computer, this brain that with quantum computers, we're trying to approximate. Can you imagine them? Billions and billions of exchanges of information that occur in your brain every second. Can you? No. Hard to comprehend. Yeah. So can we handle the more than one or a bundle? Oh my goodness, yes. Just sort them out according to your priorities. And if you've been a student of the craft, as I know you are, and if you've progressed to the point, don't give up on yourself if you haven't. There's work to be done. It's a lifetime work, truly. Then reflect for a moment on whether the ethics and values and are something that is evidence in your mood, in your steps, in your actions, in your thinking. Ethics, it's like a violation of ethics when we have the thought, not necessarily we carry out the deed, that might be criminal, but even the thought, considered that kind of insensitivity, do you and I, as grown men, deserve to go through life with that level of sensitivity and attention to detail? Isn't your life worth it? I would think. And will that change you? Yeah. I had a man not too long ago explaining to me how grown men don't show emotion. I did swallow my gum. I went on to explain that we never stop. We can't. It's whether we observe or not. we're not pushed to notice the smell of a flower. We're not pushed to think that a sunset is beautiful, or that when you're on the hunt in the woods and you see a deer appear, there's something quite, you know, that moment, whether you have a weapon with you or not, or a camera, or you're there empty-handed. There's something about those experiences. Funny that technology has given us the ability to photograph everything that we do, as if we need a running dialogue, as if our minds are not going to censor out and filter out and prioritize the things that have happened to us, as if we can become immune to forgetting some things that may be triggered in our minds and some things that won't. A natural state. I'm not so sure anything's really wrong with that. And truly, I don't want to know what you had for breakfast. My goodness. Take a picture and send it to your mom. But the joy that we see when a whole crowd of Masons are in a photograph in a lodge, that is quite pleasing. And it brings us a little closer around the world. We are, after all, able to find one another all over the place. Yeah. I hope that here we're moving toward the Christmas season. That's the celebration that I follow from my background, from my roots here in Canada. I don't know how many generations, but we landed here in 1792 to Scotland. Yeah, my good dyed-in-the-wool Graham. Take a moment and a deep breath and stretch out and enjoy the spirit that hope will be imparted from me and my family to you. The joy of the season. Look for it. It's there. It's there, whether you're housebound or bedridden, or you need to read your books through headphones. Lovely, huh? Yeah. Or you're prone to a little nocturnes of Chopin just to get yourself in the mood. Why not? Freemasonry is the mood. It's a celebration. You and I. What happens when we turn the testosterone and muscularity down and we look at each other and wonder? Then you're joining me. We're just friends walking along the shore, looking at what the storm has washed up, discovering and stuffing them into our pockets. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here. I hope that it's been entertaining and informative in some small way. And I look forward to having you join us again next week. Remember, solstice is coming. Get into it there, boys. We'll be here. Masonry will be here. This is a little Canadian sign-off today. This is Michael Bublé. For all of you.
Christmas, you can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents by the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love life breathes. Ave home for Christmas. If only you, my Ave home for Christmas. You can plan on me. And present by the tree. Christmas will find me where the love light. My dream.